ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good to be with you. We've got lots to talk about here on the show. We're about to have a conversation about packing up the house, which is tough at the best of times when you've got to get all of your stuff and put it in boxes and head somewhere else. But it's really tough emotionally when it's not your house you're packing up, when it's a loved one. Maybe your parents passed away or is going into a nursing home and having to deal with all that stuff and all the memories involved and the sheer logistics involved in packing up a house when you're feeling a bit emotionally vulnerable and when it's a bit tough. We'll chat to Dr. Erica Penny, who's a lecturer and clinical psychologist at UTS in Sydney, about how to navigate this territory. A little bit later on, we're going to take a look at one of the most interesting architectural practices in the country, DCM, Denton Corker Marshall, who've designed some of the most prominent buildings around the country, the various embassies, the Melbourne Museum, Governor Phillip and Governor Macquarie Tower in Sydney, lots of really interesting buildings. We're going to look back on a conversation about DCM and the great work that they do. We were going to interview the fabulous author, James Bradley, but I had to reschedule that because I had to do some weather coverage a bit earlier on. So plenty happening. The Mighty Challenge not far away either, and I'm looking forward to heading to the States as well to chat to Andrew Romano about a fascinating election contest. So those are some things coming your way here on Nightlife as we go through the evening together.
This is Nightlife.
Yes, it certainly is. You can join the conversation anytime, 1300 800 222, or 0467 922 702, and I'd love to hear from you. If you've been in this situation of packing up the house, what are some of the positives? What are some of the pitfalls of that process, particularly when it's for a loved one moving into a nursing home, or maybe even if they've passed away? Good evening, Dr. Erica Penny. Lovely to have you on board.
Hi, Dom. Thanks for having me.
So this topic, I guess a lot of people have had to deal with it. I'm of an age now where a lot of my friends are getting into this territory, and I remember from my grandparents as well. Just one item of furniture can unlock so many memories, the little occasional table or the lamp or the little artwork. You just look at these things and then all these things come flooding back. A whole house full of memories is quite a tough thing to deal with, I'd imagine.
I think it can be an incredibly daunting task, particularly if you are in the midst of, you know, it's not just like, I mean, packing up a house can be one of the most stressful things you do just when you're moving, let alone when it's also someone you loved and you're grieving or you're anticipating a loss because they've moved, you know, to palliative care or a you know, aged home or something like that. I mean, there's just so much to try and hold and manage and think about. It's incredibly daunting to then add this packing up task on top of it all.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why this might happen, and very few of them are good. Very few of them are positive things. I've got an interesting text here. I'm sure we'll get some stories of people who've done this for their loved ones, but we've got someone who's potentially in this situation down the track and trying to think about it. Somebody says, I'm 70 and I'm thinning, inverted commas, so my kids don't have to, but I find it hard to throw some things. Should I keep old embarrassing letters and diaries? What an interesting question that is. Do you keep the bombshells for the kids to discover, or do you sort of sanitize your own past? That's an interesting one to ponder at 70.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's whilst I think it might be different for different people, I think just starting to think about those issues is really important. You know, what do you feel comfortable sharing with your family? What do you not feel comfortable sharing with your family? I think if there's any opportunity to talk with your family, you know, before you may be at a point where you're not able to communicate or you know, you may pass away. I mean, I think there's, you know, a lot that can be gained from talking with your family about it. Or if people are really unsure, talk to a psychologist. You know, what is going to be most useful to me? How do I want to be remembered? What is the connection I have with my family and what it means to have, you know, are our values about that complete honesty, or have we had difficult relationships? Are there certain things that I don't want to be remembered for? I mean, I think it's different for different people, but I think it is important to start having those thoughts and conversations before the choice is taken away from you.
Yeah, and look, if you've got a large amount of stuff, I think just the sheer practicality of getting rid of a bunch of it's probably quite helpful, because goodness knows there's a lot of other things to worry about when someone passes away. And we can touch on some of these as well, some of the complexities, like how to deal with the will, and also just the complexities of getting people into a nursing home. I remember helping a relative with this, and just the sheer admin involved and the number of contracts and fine print. I was very stressed. He was very stressed, and hard to make good decisions. We're talking about packing up the home, particularly for loved ones if they're moving to a nursing home or maybe they've passed away, and the emotional minefield that's involved. If you want to join us, 1-300-800-222, or you can text 0467-922-702. If you've had an experience with a loved one, what was that like? How did you get through it? What did you learn from it? And was there one object that really made those memories just come flooding back? I know in my family there's a particular table that I think someone might have handmade it at some point, but that always just takes me straight back to being 8 years old and in my grandparents' house.
Yeah. And I think those objects that we really connect with are important. You know, a lot of grief researchers and clinicians will talk about, you know, death is not always the end of a relationship. It's the changing of a relationship. And so if there are those really valuable objects or objects really imbued with a lot of memory and meaning, that's often how people maintain that connection, and they think about those memories every time they're near that object, or they feel like they're bringing a piece of that person with them into their lives and sharing their ongoing life with them.
Yeah, I think it's good. Sometimes it's a nice thought to have the continuity that can work. All right, so let's say people are trying to tackle this problem. I know you've written about this for the Conversation website. If people want to read a kind of structured version of your thoughts on this, but we've acknowledged that the burden is very considerable in some cases. What's step one? What do you do? I guess you've isolated in the research that just thinking about the task is the first step before you even start, right? And coming to terms with the load of it all.
Yeah. And so I often think that the first task is determining, you know, if this feels so daunting, you don't even know where to start, I think really trying to enlist help, you know, trusted people, whether it's other family members, whether it's maybe your partner or sister-in-law or brother-in-law, who might just have that one step of, or a very close friend who might have that, you know, understand how difficult it is for you, but have that one step of distance. You know, if it's really overwhelming, I would enlist that help and ask that person, you know, can you help me come up with a game plan here? You know, can you help me organize the boxes? Can you do some of the pragmatics so that when we get there, you know, I don't need to try and hold the mental load of how to even go through the pragmatics of the task whilst I'm also trying to manage some of the more emotional challenges through it.
That's a good idea. And you isolated four key periods of the process. Let's just talk about those periods, because it does break down, you found, into phases. It's almost like steps of getting through the grief of it all.
Yeah, well, some of the literature talks about there being these different stages people can go through. Now, it's not a completely linear process. There can be individual differences, but that there are often these commonalities of, you know, the first step might just be this complete numbness and or this complete overwhelm at the thought of even having to manage someone else's belongings, let alone maybe execute a will and manage all the complex financial and legal aspects of it as well. And sometimes then as that period, that very acute period, starts to ease a little bit, people really get in touch with this loss and this yearning to maintain that closeness with a loved one. And so many people might start to feel that, oh gosh, I don't want those belongings to all go to Vinny's. You know, I really want some of those key things that were important to me. That sometimes even causes stress if siblings or different family members really, you know, feel very passionately about the same item. But there can be this yearning to want to maintain some of that closeness. And so then it often takes quite a bit of time to work through you know, the subsequent grief, sometimes anger and resentment, sometimes guilt, sometimes very mixed emotions. For some people, if they've had a very strained relationship, maybe even some relief, you know, regarding the loss of their loved one and how to manage that. But there often comes for people where there isn't really complicated grief, which I could talk about in a minute, but they'll often come this place of healing and sense-making. And that doesn't mean that, you know, grief is this thing that we just get over and we don't feel anymore, but that sometimes there gets to this moment where we feel that connection again of I'm always going to feel that loss, but I now can make more sense of it. I now maybe have this ongoing connection to that person through belongings. Often people will like to create little rituals, you know, around special anniversaries or special days where they get together with their family, or perhaps they go to the site that they might have scattered the ashes, or they go to important sites and they might have little rituals about how they maintain that closeness over time. Mm. But certainly it's non-linear, you know, and you can feel like you're okay for a while and then go back to, you know, the grief and anger and guilt and resentment period. And it's this sort of oscillation back and forth.
No, it's not a template, is it? It's not like you've got to do step one and then move to step two. This is Dr. Erica Penny from UTS. A lecturer and clinical psychologist talking about how to look after your mental health while packing up mum or dad's home. And that was one of the studies referred to in her article for The Conversation, looking at how all this happened. If you want to join the our conversation, 1-300-800-222 or text 0467-922-702. It's Nightlife on ABC Radio, and my name is Dom Knight. Neil's pointed out that it's pretty bizarre to have the Knights on the radio, then Dom Knight on Nightlife at night. Yeah, I realise there's a lot of Knights in that mix. Thanks for bearing with us. So Denise has texted in, Erica, and says, look, my name, I'm Denise, I'm 68. I've raised four grandchildren. Two have moved on independently and we're about to move house. I'm doing most responsibilities myself. How can I get them to be more cooperative? They're both over 20. So that's another aspect of it, is how you wrangle people to sort of help with the practicalities and all this sort of stuff.
And I think, you know, Denise there is also talking about grandchildren, you know, in their 20s. I think it is often harder for younger people to really, not that they may not want to or they might not feel, you know, empathic, but that it's very hard, I think, for young people to really put their mind to what would it actually feel like for my parent or my grandparent at this very different stage of life, you know. And I think even for people in their 30s and 40s, that can sometimes be challenging. But I think often by that stage, there is a little bit more awareness of having seen maybe friends and what's, you know, how they've managed their, you know. So I think Denise is probably in a particularly challenging position where it's probably harder for 20-year-olds to really understand. And it may be that in 10, 15 years, they might think, gosh, I wish I had helped more and I wish I had been able to step up. But I think being able to try and communicate your feelings, you know, and say, look, choose a really good time to sit down and say, I want to have a proper talk, a serious talk. Is this a good time? Making sure it's not rushed and really talking about what it would mean, you know, to receive that help and some of the things that you might fear, or some of the things you feel worried about, or the connection you feel you would have with your grandchildren over that.
So Jess has texted in, Erica, and says, thanks for covering this topic. I need to move into a smaller, cheaper rental, but I have a shed and cupboards full of my mum's things and it's stopping me moving. I'm having trouble letting her things go. That must be enormously hard. So this is the next phase, is you've done the pack up. You've moved all the things back to your place, and that's the easiest solution so often in this sort of situation. But then how do you do the coal then? It's very challenging.
It is so challenging. And so I would encourage people to think about what is the fear of letting it go? You know, is there a sense of I'm letting my parent down, or is there a sense of guilt, or is there a sense of mum really cared about that? You know, and so I should honor her by keeping all of these things. You know, really trying to ask, you know, reflect and ask ourselves, what is the connection to it? Because I think there'll be a number of items where the connection may be more about guilt or you know, just finding it this fear of losing a part of her if you don't have everything.
Yeah.
And then I think there's often a number of items where you go, this is something that Mum and I really valued together, or this is something that, you know, just having this, you know, shopping list of seeing her handwriting, it just brings me back to being, you know, with her again. There are those items that are much more about connection rather than about perhaps guilt or obligation. And so I think it's sometimes about trying to reflect, where is the barrier between those? And again, if that's very challenging, you know, I think it's a great opportunity to talk to, you know, a psychologist or a therapist and say, you know, what's going to be most effective to maintain my relationship with my mum through these objects, but also be pragmatic that, you know, I need to take care of myself and downsize and be looking after myself as well.
People get stuck, don't they, in these patterns, and it's very hard to say goodbye to these objects, I guess.
Yeah.
Ian's texted in, and Ian's going through this process in Auckland at the moment, right as we speak, and wanted to know the number to call in on. Normally, he's in Sydney. I think you can just call +61 300 800 222. So the normal number is 1-300-800-222. Just make it +61 300 800 222, and you should be able to get through. Or you can text 0467 922 702. George in South Australia really needs this sort of help, Erica. It's quite a really touching text here saying, my father passed away 20 years ago. I still haven't been able to work out what to do with many of his possessions. Now, unfortunately, my mum has also passed away. Where can I get professional guidance on how to move forward? A warning to others, kicking the can down the road doesn't solve the problem. Even after 20 years, finding good homes for many items is actually very difficult. I hear you, George. I completely understand. I'm not good with clutter in my own life. And the point where it's inherited clutter with sentimental value, I can really sympathise. What would you suggest, Erica, if people do want to get professional help? How do they do that?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I would just say that that experience is so common. You know, it's really common and people should certainly, I can understand the idea of, oh, maybe I shouldn't have kicked the can down the road. But at the same time, I don't think people should beat themselves up about that at all. It's very common to want to hold on to a piece of, you know, our parents, our family, our loved ones. So certainly not alone there. I think often one of the best things to do is you can talk with your GP. They often are able to write you a referral to see a psychologist, a clinical psychologist, a counsellor, and they're often the best place to find the best service in your local area. But also, you know, looking on sites like find a clinical psychologist through the Australian Clinical Psychology Association website allows you to filter through what sort of specialisations are you looking for. So you'll be able to look for psychologists in your area who specialise in grief and healing through loss. So often it's people who've had a lot of experience with grief as therapists that are able to offer that support of, okay, I get that it's not always just about the emotional experience. It's that mixture between the emotional experience and then what that means pragmatically with many of the things that, you know, we then have to manage because of that.
Dr. Erica Penny is a lecturer as well as a clinical psychologist. She's at UTS in Sydney. We're talking about the emotional burden of packing up a home for a loved one, whether they're going into care or they've passed away. And Ian in Auckland has been dealing with exactly this issue, and normally in Australia, but over in NZ, getting through this process. Hi, Ian.
Good evening, Dom. How are you?
I'm very well. So this is your challenge as we speak. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm standing in my mother's house, actually, as we speak. My mother was moved into full-time care about 10 months ago. And I've struggled. I've found that I have been through different stages of this process. And initially, of course, I was very timid and afraid to throw anything out because I guess I had at the bottom of my heart the hope that she might, you know, be able to come back here and live. But I won't bog you down with that. I'd just like to make a couple of points. The first is my mother kept every single document for the last 60-plus years, and it's been an absolute treasure trove of family history, even my own history, which, you know, you forget. And you forget your younger self. And of course, my mother had kept all my letters that I wrote to her from university and overseas, and she'd kept all my school projects. And I have completely forgotten all this part of myself. And I was looking through some stuff yesterday, which was from primary school. And I was just thinking, my God, what happened to that boy? You know, the imagination and that this boy had. And it's just been absolutely fascinating, that aspect. And the other aspect, of course, is family documentation, title deeds and transfer documents and legal letters and all of these going back through the years, not only for my mother, but for her mother. And so it's been a real journey through history and trying to work out, you know, from the vintage photos, who's who. And it's been fascinating because my grandfather died 4 years before I was born. And I've discovered all of these photos of him in aviator's gear. And, you know, I've been taking them to my mother and going, well, you know, where was this taken? And why was he wearing, you know, this gear? You know, was it in the war? And of course, you know, he died when my mother was 16, and she too has forgotten a lot of this stuff. So it's been extremely emotional and tiring, but it's also been fascinating and interesting. It does make you realize how lucky we are that, you know, those generations of people, even myself, that we wrote things, whereas the young people of today, everything's electronic. And yeah. I think forward to 20, 40, 60 years from now, when they're doing what I'm doing, and they won't have all of this treasure trove of information. It won't be there.
Or worse still, they'll have access to all the text messages and emails we sent and just thought were private. How embarrassing. Thanks for that, Ian. That's really appreciate the kind of report from the midst of wrangling all of this stuff. Great to have you on the program.
Pleasure.
Plenty to ponder there, Erica. I guess in Ian's case, it's fabulous that his mother is still around to ask about a photo. And I guess so often these things happen when it's too late to ask or whatever. And maybe it's a reminder to some of us that maybe spend some time to go through the things together and hear the stories and maybe celebrate the life before it ends, if you can.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm so glad Ian shared that story because I think from both ends, you know, even after you have lost someone, people are often quite afraid. Can I even bear to go through some of the scrapbooks, the photo albums, you know, etc. And yet once someone is ready for that, actually, often if you can share that with your family or someone close to you, you know, there's literature that says that that's really can be quite healing. And exactly as Ian's saying, there's this memory making and this identity forming and this connection of remember this and remember how wonderful that was and, you know, what a life that was lived that we're able to almost relive and share in. But certainly, you know, I would encourage everyone to think about if you've got these sorts of memories, you know, start writing on the back of them the date and who was in it, you know, or start talking to your family about it, you know, earlier so that memory, those memories can be shared. And yes, I do think about, you know, the digital age and I know that there's these legacy settings you can put on a lot of social media, you know, to yeah. say, well, this person can have access to my social media after I pass away and whatnot. But I think it's too early for us to know, but I do wonder whether the same level of that re-experiencing and that sharing in a life will be found by going through the old social media versus these sorts of hard copy.
I don't want anyone going through my social media. It's terrible. Yeah. It's not a beautiful handwritten letter. Lots of interesting text in here, Erica. Anne in Woi Woi says, with some things, taking and keeping photos of things is enough, but some special things should be kept and held close. That's a lovely thought. Jane says, my mother's 93 with dementia in aged care. We just have way too many possessions. I think of nature and nomadic tribes who have very few possessions but are satisfied and connected. These days, a lot of our stuff's mass-produced. I just want to avoid it all going to landfill. Absolutely. Alan has isn't Vietnamese himself, but when his mum passed away, Alan's Vietnamese friend set up a shrine with her picture and flowers in the house while Alan cared for the dog. and maybe that helps. I mean, we've got some photographs of relatives in prominent spots around the house, and that it does. It's whether it's a shrine or not, it's a nice thing to have. Okay, so look, a lot to unpack here, but I guess some of the practical sides, just to recap, Erica, before we say goodbye, that just I love the notion of sharing it with someone who doesn't have the same emotional load that you have, and breaking it down. You know, every yes. task can be broken down, as overwhelming as it might seem. What's step one, and then do step two, go from there.
Yeah, and if you do have that opportunity to have a little bit more time, feeling you don't need to get in there in one day and push yourself and get everything done, you know, if you can take that little bit more time to say, I'm just going to do this section and then I'm going to give myself a break and be kind to myself, and then we're going to do this section, you know, I think there can be, you know, any ways to reduce that mental burden and allow you to actually, if possible, you know, find those memories and connection in those moments rather than trying to rush through it all so it's done, I think can, you know, be important to the long-term process.
Yeah, and look, a lot of people are texting in about how to assess this process from the other end if you're downsizing yourself and pondering.
Yes.
And people have, someone's texted in, when my mum knew she was dying, she made a list of things she wanted to go to, which one of us and so on. She knew somebody wanted, then she gave us the list to look at and revise. And then when it came time to sort out her house, we had a box for each of us and put what was on the list for that person. That's a very organised, I mean, not everyone knows that it's going to happen, but if you do, it gives you time to plan these kinds of things.
Absolutely.
My grandmother went through and did the division of the family photos for each of her four children and put them in a lovely folder with photos of them and from when they were young, and then the recipes that she'd made. So that was a really nice memento that we still have.
And if that's possible for people to do, you know, I think it's for people to think too about their legacy. You know, what do I want to be remembered for? Mm. What special item do I want certain members of my family to have that will be memorable between us? So I think if people are listening and have that opportunity, there is something really important about those conversations and reflections.
Yep, I'm curating. But my legacy, I can tell you. But maybe the thing to do is rather than whittling down and going for an entire life's worth of stuff and trying to cut out, maybe you start with the things that are most precious, the things you couldn't bear. And maybe if there's just a couple of boxes or something to fill, rather than going, well, what can I possibly throw out? What do I most want to keep? And that question you always ask yourself, if there was a fire, what would I grab first? Maybe that's the way to ponder it. And the rest of it can just go. Perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah. Yes, I think definitely for some it may be, oh, look at all this junk, let's get rid of it. For others it might feel so difficult that it's like, yes, let's choose the five most important items first and then let me look at the rest and see what else might be meaningful or not. Certainly I think you can approach it either way.
Some sort of a structure will help. And as you mentioned, Erica, look, psychologists, clinical psychologists in particular can help with this. Can you just remind us one more time where people go if they want to get in touch with some professional help with these sorts of very challenging emotional landscapes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a great port of call is to talk to your local GP, because often they know the best services in your area. You might have, you know, personal contacts with, or professional contacts with psychologists that they recommend. But also if you're unsure, you can look at the findaclinicalpsychology.org website, which is through the Australian Clinical Psychology Association, which will allow you to select particular specialties that a psychologist has and then find people with those specialties in your area.
Well, Erica, I feel somewhat better prepared for one day if I have to do this. I'll at least know where to start. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Dom. It's been a pleasure.
That's Dr. Erica Penny, who is a clinical psychologist and also a lecturer at the Faculty of Health, University of Technology.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.